All right, so today we're going to work maybe to answer some of these questions. A couple root locust examples. So this one will roughly follow. Example 7.4. Okay, and we have our normal feedback control loop. Which I'll draw for completeness. All right, so where do we go? We want to draw a root locus for this guy. Need my open loop transfer function, which is
K over
KG. All right, so over all that stuff I just wrote. Okay. What's next? Okay, so the implicit check we just did already is this in the right form? Or would it be in the right form?
No. Factor, right?
Well, yes, so we need to get the factor, but even a step above that, right, you need your characteristic equation to be of this form. So would our characteristic equation for the system be of that form, where the parameter we're trying to vary, here's k, is multiplying the whole transfer function? No. So we need the... characteristic equation has to be in that form. Right. What's the closed loop transfer function? Right. So our characteristic equation for this system is going to be in the right form? Yes or no? Characteristic equation. Is it going to be in the right form?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good. We can have, and we'll see later today, you can have parameters embedded in G that you're actually varying. So if you have a more complex block diagram or system, right, you need to figure out some, you need to rewrite that transfer function using your block diagram algebra, which we'll do, where there's a k, the constant you're varying is multiplying some transfer function. Okay. So implicitly, so far we haven't seen one where that's not the case, but we are doing that check, and you need to do that check. Make sure that your characteristic equation has this form, or can be rewritten into that form. Right, and k is the actual parameter that's varying as we're drawing the locus. All right. So yes, we need to find poles and zeros. How many zeros do we have? How many poles do we have?
Four.
One of them's easy.
Zero.
Yeah. And I'll give you the rest instead of us having to worry about that math. So you have a complex conjugate pair. What does that tell you about the dynamics of the system right away?
It's not on the real axis.
Not on the real axis? What does that mean about the response? there's some damping. So we're not just on the imaginary axis. We're also not just on the real axis. We have a complex conjugate pair of poles. It's oscillatory with some damping. Right. So we have an underdamped pair of poles there. Complex conjugate pair is underdamped if they're not on the imaginary axis. All right, so we can already start drawing some stuff. I will come over here maybe. That might give us enough space. All right, and we have, let's do two. Minus 4, we have a pole at 0, right? We have a pole at minus 4, and our axes will not be What's next?
Find your locus.
How many different loci will I have here? Why three? How do I calculate? What's that number? Yeah, exactly right. So it's if you have more poles than zeros, you have as many separate loci as number of poles. All right. So we got more poles than zeros, and we got four poles. We should have four different segments, if you want to think about them that way. All right, so now we're going to have, stick with your book, we have four separate loci. All right, what's next? So we can take care of the real axis right away. All right. So where does that show up here?
In between
the two poles, right? So in this segment we have one pole plus zero to the right. Over here we'd have two, so nothing there. We do have a segment in between those two. All right. So we got part of one of our loci taken care of. What's next? Asymptotes, yeah, we can go there. You remember that equation that describes where they're at? So, kind of that sigma was the place on the real axis where they intersect. So we have all right, so for us, 0, minus 4, and then let's just write it out. All right, so we know we're going to have some asymptote intersection is there. What about the angle? Remember that? So we have So what kind of asymptotes do we have? So k equals 0, we got a quarter of 180. K equals 1, we got 3 quarters of 180. And we can keep going down the road there. So what does that mean for us? Well, we have 2 45 degree lines. See if I can get this something close to 45. Okay, so asymptotes going through 3.
That's right, but like it's 4 asymptotes technically.
Yeah, because this goes to
right.
So it's 0, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. But 2 just gives you the.
It just repeats. Yeah, it just repeats. Okay, so we have our asymptotes. What's next? What was that? The one we got with the characteristic equation. Which one?
Find where it crosses the axis.
Okay, so we can take care of when it crosses the imaginary axis. Sure. Different order than I did it, but sure.
Yep.
Yep. That's fine. They don't. As long as you do them all, it doesn't matter so much. Okay. Okay. How do we do that? How do we figure that one out? There's a few different methods. We did one in class last time.
It's where you take your characteristic equation plus k equals 0? Or
characteristic equation.
So it should cross the real axis. The imaginary axis.
Oh, you do 1 plus kg equals 0.
Mm-hmm. So we take the characteristic equation, and what do we do with it? Yep, that's the way we did it before. There's a few different ways. So our characteristic equation, I'm going to write it slightly different than we have so far. Make sure I get all the coefficients right. So our characteristic equation, the one method we looked at is, hey, plug in I omega for S. All right, and then you can collect terms. I'll move right out the intermediate step. Just for you guys. And then collect real and imaginary terms. Okay. All right, so what has to be true for this equation to be true?
Both parts have to equal 0.
So we have I'm going to go ahead and factor out an omega there. So equations, two unknowns, omega and k. We know one pair right away, right? Omega is 0. What does that mean k is for that pairing? Yep. So if solve for this guy, he's 0. Plug in 0 there, you get k equals 0. So one pair. What does that correspond to? Where are we crossing the imaginary axis?
At 0.
Yeah, so you remember your closed, right? The locus is the plot of the closed loop poles, right? And they start at the open loop poles. So we're starting with a gain of 0 at the open loop pole that's at the imaginary axis. That's one of those loops. All right. So our other solution is just straightforward there. And then we can plug in that answer over here and find what the value of k ends up being. 5. Okay. Well, what does this tell us about where? How does that give us any information about where it's crossing the axis at? This omega. So on the imaginary axis, if I have poles here on the imaginary axis, right, this height's actually omega d for any generic pole, right? But if I'm on the imaginary axis, zeta is 0, so omega d is equal to omega n. So I know that I have points up there, they're plus or minus 3 points 266. So I have some crossing there and some crossing there. Something like that. 3.2. That's something like 3.2. All right. What else do we have? I think my asymptotes are not quite right for the scale of my y-axis. So yeah, let's fix those. If that's 3.2 there, then these need to be lower than that, right? 3 to 3. My actual distances are different, yeah. So my y-axis is kind of squished compared to the x. But all right. What's left now? Breakaway point, sure. We can fit that here. Underline that too to make it all match. How do I figure those out? Back. It's going to be somewhere there, that's right. So you got the bounds on it at least.
We could, I think, assume -3 and -1.
Between -3 and -1, why do you say that?
Well, because we have -3 for our first asymptote.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you can squeeze that balance down. You're right there. I think, strictly speaking, you couldn't assume that. In this case, it might be okay. But you are right that that breakaway point is going to, or the center of the asymptotes is going to be to the left of where that breakaway point probably is. So.
The first step, though, I think, is to write K as a function of S, right?
Right. So you want to rearrange your characteristic equation so it's K equals some stuff, a function of S, right? So... It's 12s cubed, 1064. So write k, some function of s, by just rearranging the characteristic equation. Then what do I do?
Take the derivative and set it equal
to. Right, so then I take and solve that, figure out what values of S give me that, solve that for me. And I'll save us the math on that too. I don't need to test your calculus skills. Breakaway point, the viable one is going to be 1.58. Yep. Okay, 1.58. Yeah, it can't be a breakaway point if it's not on a locus already. So that's 1.58. It must be something like there. We have a breakaway point. All right. What's left? One piece of one of the steps we haven't done yet on any of these problems.
Angle
departure.
Yeah.
Or angle, if we had zeros, angle of arrival. Okay, so we'll stick that over here too. So we gave some equation for figuring that out that's, I think, not very intuitive. So I went back and reviewed some of my old notes. Where are we at? You guys got me all confused. Okay. So let's think about the angle of departure. And really, it's the same equation, but I think a simpler way to think about that equation. And again, it's actually the same information, but this kind of, I think, makes it a little more clear what it is. All right, so let's consider the this pole. All right, so let's look at these angles then. So the angle that describes this relationship is 90 degrees. So you draw the vector from one pole to the other, there's a 90 degrees there. Same thing with this one. Right, so the two poles this is kind of a nice example for us because they all line up at 4, so those two angles are 90. So yeah. All right. How about this angle? No, you're looking at all the poles. So that's what I'm asking. What's the angle? So we have, so you take the pole you're looking at, what's the angle between all other poles in that pole?
That one would be 45.
45? Where do we measure the, we're gonna measure from there. All right, so sum of all the angles to all of our other poles. Do you have any zeros to worry about? No. So our angle of departure is at negative 135 degrees or 225 if we measure clockwise. So angle of departure, something like that. Do we need to calculate this one?
No, same thing. Symmetric.
Yeah, so it's going to be symmetric. So you could calculate it. I do in the notes, actually. You get the same thing. Symmetric about the real axis. Okay? So what's left? I think you're just drawing a thing, right? So just draw the vector and measure the angle of that vector from horizontal.
To the pole that you're trying to find the angle of departure.
Well, the direction of that vector, let's see. 90, 90.
90 degrees from that negative 4 pole on the real axis to the negative 4 plus 4i pole.
I'm not sure I follow what you're asking, but let me just walk through it one more time and see if that answers. Right. So just draw the vectors between. So I have a vector between this pole and this one, this dotted line. The angle of that line is 90. Right. I have a vector from this pole to that pole. It's 90. Right. I have a vector between these two guys. He's 135 from horizontal. Yeah, I mean, I get what you guys are asking. Which direction is the vector pointing?
If you're measuring from the horizontal of the tail.
That's...
Because if your vector is pointing down and you're measuring from the horizontal...
Yeah, I get what you're asking. I get what you're asking. I'm not sure that actually matters in the math. From all other. Yeah. Just take the, you're going to take the angle from horizontal. Because that is the angle. That matters for this guy, if we're looking at the angle of that. That's what really what this is doing. It's kind of, in some ways, a shortcut to fulfill the angle condition that actually is defining the root locus, right? Remember, we've broke this out. So what this angle of departure is really doing is giving you this at that pole. What angle satisfies that at that pole? So this is kind of a shortcut to having to calculate that directly for small increments away from the open loop poles. Okay. Four. So we have left to draw the thing. We know we're going to intersect there and there. So something like that. And then these guys would come down and approach that asymptote from that way. And we're done. Okay. So what does this tell us about how these closed loop poles change as I increase K?
As you increase K to infinity, it approaches the zeros. Right?
We don't have any zeros. Where is it going?
Well, they're somewhere. Because you not about the real axis.
Increase K.
Approaching the asymptote?
Well, you okay, so it they go to that like where it intersects the real axis, I guess.
Okay, well, let's start with the complex conjugate pair. We look at each kind of pole. These guys are going to move identically. So I start increasing K from this guy. Where is he going? So this one, right, so if you look at K is increasing just for this guy. I increase K, I increase K, I increase K, I increase K. I start moving out that way. Well, yeah, you're going out here. For that case. So that mode is getting faster or slower? Faster. Okay. How about this one? As I increase K, what happens to that one?
It stays on the real axis up to your breakaway points.
Stays on my real axis, my breakaway point.
And then approaches your asymptote.
Then it'll go up one of these. Either up or down. How about the other one?
Same thing.
Goes this way. No. Yeah. So is there a gain in this case that my system can cause my system to go unstable?
Yes.
Right, and we figured out what that was. Gain's greater than that, we go unstable. All right. So where would I want to choose the gain to be? Where would I want to place my closed loop poles? So if I increase, if I'm increasing K, so let me see if I'm understanding. You want one kind of here. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah.
Draw it as like a triangle. So that's one candidate. Where is this pole going to be when that one's kind of close there, like that?
It'd be
close on the other side. Okay. And then these would be moving out here somewhere. Why do you like that place?
Because it doesn't kill the asymptote to take that ride on to cross that axis.
Okay. Well, what does that tell us? What does this pole location tell us about what the response would look like?
Well, for your two poles on the real axis, you wouldn't have damping, would you?
Do we? Pole and a real axis. Do you have damping or no damping?
The,
mm-hmm. This is a good one to review because it drives everything we're doing here. Let's see. Let's draw kind of an aside here for right now. A pair of complex conjugate poles. All right. What is that distance there?
2 zeta omega.
Close.
Zeta omega.
Okay. Okay. What is?
That's omega d, which is omega n times the square root of 1 minus zeta squared.
Okay. We have that. All right. What is this distance? Okay.
So as you increase your gain, your natural frequency would increase, right? Because you have your complex conjugate poles.
Hang on to that for a second. Let's finish this discussion. So if I have some angle here, what describes that angle about our system? All right, so if that angle is 0, what is zeta?
Pi over 2.
Is that the sign? That's the... Is this a sign? It's one of these. Which one is it? You guys help me out.
I'm looking at my notes.
Bottom size cosine?
That's what it says. Yeah.
Okay. So if zeta, if this is 1, zeta is 1, then theta is what? That makes sense for it to be... Okay. That should be right. Yeah. Okay. So if we're on the real axis, whichever way this works, we can work this out. Then zeta is 1. All right. So zeta is 1 on the real axis, but theta is 0. All right. So theta should be 0. That's 1. That works out. Okay. Yeah, that's right. So, what you're telling me by putting your poles right here is that I want a critically damped system. Or approaching critical damping. For those two modes, for that mode. You might, right? So this might be a reasonable choice. I'm not saying it's not, right? But that's kind of where we're looking, right? If I start going up this way, right? Yeah, my damping is increasing. Actually, my natural frequency is going down at that point. I'm getting closer. Right. So that's what we're. I'm trying to get at what we actually use this for, or what you could use this for. Where can I put the poles, the closed loop poles?
I guess it would depend on what kind of compromise you want.
Yeah, that's why I don't know, but it depends on what system this actually represents, where a good place would be. Right, yeah, if it's a chemical process or something, I probably do want these guys to be close to critically damped or even over-damped. If it's a mechanical system, we generally don't want our mechanical systems to be critically damped or over-damped because it's too slow. So we can want high-ish levels of damping, but not quite critical. So it depends on what compromise you want. But the point is that by drawing the root locus, or even sketching it by hand, really quickly, kind of like this, you can get some information about where can I actually push these poles around to by just changing K. And what can the closed loop response end up looking like by changing this parameter? So I can keep pushing. If I wanted to, I could keep pushing K up, right? And we would get to some poles like that, and these would be farther off over there somewhere. So that flexible mode starts getting faster, the high frequency flexible mode. It's getting higher and higher frequency, right? This guy's actually, depends on that distance, probably slowing down a little bit, and you're definitely losing damping. Yeah?
This may be a little off topic. Can you use an oscilloscope to view this?
You can get all the information you need to plot a root locus from experimental stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
What you wouldn't get a root locus directly. Next chapter we talk about frequency domain stuff.
Okay.
So if you've ever heard of a Bode plot, or we can take all this stuff and write it as a function of the input frequency, basically. So I can take this and I push on my system at a certain frequency and see how it responds. And I push it on a little bit different frequency and see how it responds. I push on a little bit of frequency and see how it responds, and I can plot that out for each frequency, and I get a frequency response. And from that, I can get to the transfer function, an experimentally derived transfer function. And from that experimentally derived transfer function, I can get to a root locus. So, we can get to a root locus strictly from experimental information about our system. That'll all make a lot more sense in about 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, I'm learning all this stuff this semester.
But we'll see that frequency response stuff, getting the Bode plot, that's used all the time. Right. So I vary my input to my system, I push on it a harmonic, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, wait for it to get the steady state. Okay, how much is it moving? Record that amplitude. Move on to the next little frequency, record that amplitude, and I get a plot of frequency versus amplitude. And that gives me all the information I have here, basically. Or allows me to approximate all the information I have here. Okay, let's move on and at least set up another example. Omega n is increasing.
Omega n?
Yeah.
Omega, that's...
Because your omega d would still have to be zero.
But the frequency increase, the higher you go up on the y.
This is the natural frequency. Right, so if you're on the real axis, you're not oscillating, so you don't have a frequency. Right. Once you hit critical damping, you don't have an oscillatory response anymore. So natural frequency doesn't really have a meaning in that sense.
So what's your damping do? It's not one whole way, right? So what changes if you're just on the real axis and I'm going to the left?
Well, you can. The damping. Let's see. This still holds. Okay. Imagine. Let's look at more detail. Okay, so I'm zoomed in super tight on that real axis now. All right. and we have, let's say, poles that are marching this way. So we still have a pair of complex conjugate poles. Okay, infinitely close to that real axis now. Kind of the case we had at that breakaway point, and you will have at that breakaway point. Right? You can start creeping up after that breakaway and be infinitely close to that real axis. So if we have a pair of complex conjugate poles, then all this stuff still applies. Okay, so that this distance still omega n, right? And if we're infinitely close here, right, then what's the difference between there and that distance and the distance to the poles itself? What's the difference between those two? Basically nothing, right? Right? So this is zeta omega n. If I'm infinitely close there, omega n is approximately equal to zeta omega n, so zeta is about 1. Right, if I have a omega n, zeta omega n, basically the same, right? If I'm really close to that real axis. So what does that tell you about what, I mean, zeta's got to be close to 1 there, right? So if you, in the limit of those guys coming together right there, or if you have repeated roots on the real axis, you have critical damping. Okay. As they start splitting, you end up with one that's, you get overdamped as they split from that case there. So you get damping ratio greater than 1 once they start splitting. So if your locus is this, which is actually a common shape, you move over to these guys, you have overdamped dynamics now. And you can't really use this so much to reason about what's going on because all these relationships are based on it being underdamped. Let's set up another one. I'm going to draw up a block diagram this time. So I have a transfer function G. Is that I have a constant K, who is the one I get to tweak in this case. All right, I want to draw the root locus on this thing and help me to help me figure out what k should be. All right, so what's the first step? Okay. So how do I do that? Transfer function. Okay. So what is the open loop transfer function?
G times 1 over S times K.
G times 1 over S times K?
Yeah.
Why don't you guys take 5 minutes or so and give it a shot to start setting it up? A little bit of review of, yeah, we're going to need both. So if you got, go start hammering at it. Yeah, the closed loop, well, yeah, I guess in either case, it ends up being C over R, output over input. Hang on to that for a second. I want you to think about it a little bit first. G minus GK. I'm trying to do the math in my head if that's equivalent to what. For open loop or closed loop? That might be right. Well, hang on to it for a second. Let folks keep banging on it for another minute or two. And so if you got the open loop, go for the closed loop too, because we're going to need that as well.
you maybe reduce it?
Yeah, hang on one second. Okay, so what's the approach to get to either of these? There's a few different ways you can kind of think about getting there for these multi-loop kind of systems. Yeah, so I could take this loop and maybe, let's see. I could try to write some transfer function for all of this stuff. These are my block diagram algebra skills. Right. I could also, and kind of the way I did it is I took this interior block and got it. Okay, and left the 1 over S outside. Or you could just start writing, you know, E is R minus C, and kind of just work through that way, which is actually the same thing you're doing with the block diagram algebra. Right, so it's a few ways to kind of think about it. It all gets you to the same math, effectively. Okay. So I'm actually going to save the math so we can get to the actual root locus part of this. I'll just give you the math of my notes. So if you want to check what you did or kind of how I did it, check your notes. I'm going to write, let's see. Open loop, still can write a C over R. Okay, yes. All right, I said the math for how I got there for these two is in the notes for you to check out. Okay, so if we're going to work the root locus part of this problem, what's next? Poles and zeros. I think you're a half step ahead of... Yeah, so... I dropped a hint earlier that we might be doing a problem where it's not in the right form. Is this in the right form? No, right? So what I want, this is not in a kind of 1 plus kg form, even if I kind of rearrange the terms. Right? This k is embedded in that, it's got some s stuff associated with it. Okay. So what do I do?
Algebra?
Algebra, yeah. That's going to be a good path forward. Well, I need to try to kind of massage this guy into something that's equivalent to it, but that has it in that kind of k plus g form. So that's where, you know, if you're kind of a visual type person, where rearranging the block diagram can help you out, right? Doing that kind of visual block diagram algebra, remembering those rules, or you could just do it from a straight algebra perspective. All right. So let's write. I'm going to write this out. And kind of expand those terms. So I'm not going to remember all those coefficients. So there's my characteristic equation. Okay. I'm going to say, well, let's define the parameter I'm actually varying, capital K, kind of our block diagram vocabulary, and it's 20 times that small k. It's the k here. And then I'm going to take this whole equation and divide by all the terms that don't have that k in it. So that I get yes. And there's an S on top here too. Okay. So I substituted in this capital K, it's not minus, for 20K. Then I divided right and left side of the, divided the whole equation, right and left, by all the terms that don't contain the K term. I'm hesitant to say always.
Okay, not always, but like most of the time. It should.
Open loop denominator. That's not what we have here, is it?
It's close.
It's not exactly that, right?
Just don't have a K yet.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right in the sense that the same parts of the thing show up all over the place. Right? You can take the kg 1 plus kg and you know immediately kind of what that's going to look like. It's okay.
So if we just plug back 20k and for k, or are we going to leave it like that?
We're going to leave it as k, the cap k. It's kind of convention to have just the number and the if what you're varying is that. Okay. So what we're looking at now, right, is this in the form we need. Do we have some cap, some constant times a transfer function, 1 plus some constant times a transfer function equals 0. Is it in the right form now? Yes? No?
Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be that G, right? It's just times any transfer.
It doesn't have to be that G. That's right. It's not that G in this case. But it is it in that form? That's going to tell us how the response of this. And you could get an equivalent. You could get this where there's a K out front, right? You could do the block diagram algebra. I mean, that's all we're doing here, is block diagram algebra to figure out what's the equivalent what does G have to be for it to be in this form. That's all we're doing. Okay. How many zeros do we have? Open loop zeros.
Three.
Zeros.
Oh, sorry. One.
1, 0. How many poles?
Three.
Okay. So let's start drawing. I'll give you pole locations are at we have an undamped complex conjugate pair, plus or minus 2. We have a 0 at 0. And then we have a pole out here at minus 5. So, 1, 2. Try to get the scaling right this time. All right. And this goes off. All right. So what's next? Yeah, no, I can know right away. I have one. I could draw one piece. And I know which direction that's going to go to. All right, remember, closed loopholes go from open loopholes to open loop zeros. So I already know I'm going to have some kind of, it may not be this pole, but I'm going to have some kind of closed loop pole going there as I increase the gain. Okay, what's next? Okay, how many branches is this going to have? Not asymptotes. How many loci branches? Separate loci. Somebody said it. Three. Why three? That's how many poles you have. We have more poles than zeros, and we have three poles. That's how many separate loci you're going to have. Okay. All right, so asymptotes. So we know that already. Where is our asymptote located? That's right. Asymptote there. Okay, what's the angle? So you have asymptote looking like that. You got minus 5, the plus and minus 2. Imaginary components cancel, so you can kind of ignore those. You have a 0, 0. Negative 5 over 3 poles, minus 1, 0. Minus 5 over 2 is minus 2.5. Okay, so we have an asymptote, 90 degrees. What's next?
Where it crosses.
We can do where it crosses, sure.
Or we can follow your notes, it's fine.
No, that's fine.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Let's think about where it crosses for a second. Where is it going to cross? Just looking at this so far. Got 3 points already. Well, we got one where it's going to get to zero there, right? We got the k equals 0 points, right? We got k equals some infinitely large point to get to that zero. Okay. Where do you think these two branches are going to go?
To infinity.
To infinity somewhere, right? So finding the zeros where it crosses, it's not going to cross. And we can see that by looking at, let's look at the angles of departure. All right, let's look at this first pole. Okay. So I have 90, 90, inverse 10 to 2/5. Well, remember the angle of departure. Is that? Right, and that ends up being 158.2 degrees, I think is what it is, 158.2. So if you look at the angle here, 158.2, something like that.
Shouldn't that be 90 plus
tangent inverse? Yep, since it's inside, right. And we know it's symmetric. So we know if we're starting at those poles and going at that angle, we're going towards the asymptote. So we don't need to solve the negative one. Go there. Where? Should have been at that angle. So as we increase the gain, that original complex conjugate pair in the open loop transfer function goes this way. This open loop pole that's on the real axis goes towards the imaginary axis. So what's kind of the trade-off here in this system? As I increase k, which is the same as increasing the small k. If I increase the small k, I increase the big k, my 1 over 20 less. So what's happening to the response? When I started out, I had a pair of complex conjugate poles that were undamped. Right? I started increasing k, big one or little one, actually, right? Given the equation. That k is adding damping in this case. So this distance is going to be the natural frequency will always be increasing because you're getting farther away.
Right. But as you approach your asymptote, your
damping ratio
would increase negligibly. So approach.
Is that going to be true? Does it stay, what do you mean level?
Stay level as far as like dampening because it's symmetric, like the two angles or the two
So one way to think, let me try to answer that a little bit. One way to think, if you think back to where we have to satisfy the angle condition. Right, so in this case, this guy is 180 degrees, right? And then if these are symmetric about the real, they're canceling each other out. So we're always satisfying the angle condition in that case, if they're symmetric. As these go off to infinity, omega n is getting larger, but zeta omega n is the same. So zeta is actually going down at some point as you're going out to infinity. So I get, if I'm increasing k here, I get some increase in damping, and then things start oscillating faster, but my damping actually is actually getting smaller at that point. So there's some trade-off on how far you want to push the gain. And you also start getting a closed loop pole that's getting close and closer and closer to being unstable.
So you don't have breakaway points here.
No breakaway points.
That math and come out to nothing.
Yep. Okay. Other questions? The location of the poles, you solve the sky equal to zero. Yeah.
Is a lab more for observation purposes than actual, like, because it didn't seem like we had to change too much of the program. It seemed more just...
It's something like that, yeah. I mean, I think there's a little bit you have to add. But I do walk you through the first problem as an effort to help you do the rest of them, yeah. But I think it will help you understanding those problems, working them that way, yeah. And lead us into doing that same stuff on a physical system.
Was there, are we supposed to meant like different questions, or is it just an overall program for all?
It can all fit in one notebook.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, I'll see you guys next week.